So recording is started.
Okay, great. Thanks, Brady. This is the October 11th, 2017 OEMR board meeting. Call to order and a roll call. Pull up the director list here. Jit?
I'm here. I'm here.
Robert is
present.
Thank you, Jit. Great, thank you. And Robert's delayed. Is Sherwin here?
Yeah.
Great. Lou, I know you're here.
Yes, sir.
Shamim? Absent. Brady's here. Senna is excused. Roberto is on the call, I believe.
I'm here.
Great. Matthew's here.
Here.
Steven's here. And I guess Scott is absent. So that takes care of the roll call. Approval of prior meeting minutes. Is everyone okay with the August 9th minute?
Yeah, I approve. Yep.
I'll second that. This is Brady. And you know, just I'm going to add guests to the roll call too. We have Daniel.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
And then we also
welcome Daniel.
And then John also just called in too, John Williams.
Oh, cool. Hello, John. And how about the September 13th minutes? How are we on those? Any questions?
I'll make a motion to accept those minutes.
I'll second that, Sloop.
Perfect. I don't think we need votes. I think we can go into maybe some of those parliamentary rules for like small board meetings and streamline some of this, but I think we just need to, you know, speak up if we have a problem, basically. It's like the negative approach. Okay, in the financial report, I posted the quarter profit and loss and the balance sheet and then the profit and loss for the month of September. So if there's any questions on those, I'd be happy to talk about it. And if anyone has any questions, there's a little bit more activity coming up here in October because we're sponsoring a couple of conferences we'll get to later in the meeting. So, but the basic story is we have about $10,000 in assets at the close of September. And not hearing any questions, I'll just keep this thing moving because I know we got a lot to discuss later on.
This is really quick question. This is Jit.
Yeah,
I have a quick question. What are most of that assets from? Is it from liquid cash or other, like just kind of, I haven't had a chance to look at it, but just briefly.
It's all cash. Yep.
It's all cash. Okay. It's all liquid.
All liquid.
So we can use it for expenses and stuff.
Yep. I moved the old account into the new bank account. We were in Bank of America. We moved to a local co-op bank. Back, I don't know, 6 months ago or so. And, you know, the interest rates are still pretty abysmal. So it's just sitting there in cash. So we're not really making much money out, you know, maybe a penny a month or something.
I mean, do you ever think about CDs? Like, I know that, I don't know what the different offers are, but I mean, that's a little bit better, still not making much. But how much do we need liquid right now if we have that?
I know. I think actually we need more liquid now than we would have 6 months ago. I think 6 months ago that probably would have been a better play. But
yeah.
we're starting to get a lot more activity and you know, events to kind of spend. So, you know, it's a good thing to actually use the money. We also had to pay for some legal work, you know, this past month we paid for the estimate on what it would take to battle the IRS. That was $1,250. I probably should get in the habit of just going over some of the bigger ticket items that I believe they're listed. There might not be as much detail on those profit and loss. Maybe as granular as it could be, but yeah.
Cool.
Any questions, Brady, on any of that?
No. And then we have someone just calling 973. Is that Robert?
That's John.
John. Oh, okay. You got a, looks like you're having some, okay. I got you.
It's a New Jersey number two, isn't it? 973?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Hey. should be like, name that tune, name that area code.
The Galtierio family is very skilled. You know, Matthew and I have noticed that, and it runs in your clan. He's a lot of talent.
We have a lot of, yeah, my, I have a lot of cousins go with the same name as me, and a lot of talent singers, and, you know, everybody looks up, when people look up my name, they typically find one of my cousins, and it's not me, and some of them are kind of shady characters, so I always have to be careful about that.
I think you're secretly the musician and the famous singer.
The musician, right? The famous singer, the opera, well, my most famous cousin was, he passed away in Chicago. He was an opera director. And then the guy who sings, he's now in Georgia, I believe. Yeah, we had someone else who was quite famous. I forgot. Oh, my uncle invented an entire food chain. He's in Arizona now. And he invented an entire food chain for cooking, bringing fresh food home to cook Italian style. It was called the Abu Danza restaurant chain in New York City. He became quite wealthy with that. So he's living in Camelback now in Arizona. Nice. We're all over the place.
Wow. You have a little nugget for us every month. It's pretty enjoyable. Okay, so I'm going to move along to the unfinished business. And I wanted to lead off with the IRS and OMR. We've got a phone call on Friday with the appeals officer. Reached out to me last month, and I put a little snippet of what this we can expect from the phone call. I mean, as it is now, we are still battling for 501c3 status until we withdraw our protest appeal. And you know, I wanted to put this right at the top of the unfinished business, just to discuss this amongst the board about. Yeah, maybe there's something you want more information on or have some advice on or just, you know, questions about what's going on. Because later, under new business, we have the organizational restructuring topic, which kind of, a take off of this. And we discussed this previously last month. It's kind of understood that this is a real uphill battle for us to get to the reclaim the 501c3, and so you know, Lou had a really nice contact, Mark, who sent us some advice, which I put a link to below in the new business about you know what maybe this is a better fit for us going forward. But the fact is, we're still dealing with the IRS about 501c3. So I just thought I would put that out first and see if we wanted to talk about that a little bit more.
This is Lou. I would be curious in your conversation if the IRS brings up, have you guys considered another type of nonprofit? Without telling them we're doing it, but have you brought that up before with them, or have they suggested it? Do you think they'd be warm to that, or would it just, you know, the complete opposite position would be, so you really, you know, don't care what you are. So you're fighting for this 501c3, but you don't care what you are. So it could be a big negative to bring that up. But I was just curious if there had been any discussion from the IRS side on other types of structures.
No, it seems to me they just want to deal with this matter at hand and just, you know, approve or deny the reinstatement.
Yeah.
However, you know, I'm kind of encouraged that it is an informal discussion, so that could come up. You know, I think if we had wanted to really battle this, we right now would have some true legal advice from some attorneys about how to approach this phone conference. But yeah, we discussed this previously. It just seemed like it was going to be way too much of a battle to get into. It was way too expensive, time consuming. However, I do think this is kind of nice, is like you get to meet with them, go over their findings and their decision, and that way just kind of know from that point, like, what happens. And I'm pretty sure the next step is you're going to court if you want, because I don't think they're going to back down at all from what they've decided.
Yeah. I know somebody in government who told me informally that under the Trump administration that they're probably going to be going after 501c3s in about 6 to 7 months. They're going to start making a part of tax reform. And so just, you know, who knows how true that is.
Yeah, you don't know. Maybe it's fake news.
Yeah, maybe it's fake news.
So you think we could gauge maybe what, maybe the meeting on Friday, you'll be able to gauge sort of what they want, maybe. I mean, you could just use it as that, just see what they, I mean, is it a lost cause, or do they have advice on what we could do to potentially still go for the 501c3, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to bring up issues that we had with their settlement. We did file a protest letter after we received their final decision in January, and then February, and then we had 30 days. So in February, we replied with our protest, which put this chain of events in place, which finally came to bear last month when we set up this call. And if there were, I mean, the more I look into it, not only did we lose on one of the grounds to be a 501c3, we lost on the other ground too. There's like two things you have to carry out in order to be a 501c3, and the IRS called us out on both of them, which I thought was kind of remarkable. Not only do we not do either of them, we don't do both.
And we weren't even aware of it, like reading their response. I mean, you figured it out, but we weren't even aware of these things. Oh, goodness. What were they, obviously?
One is you have to be exclusively operating as a charity. We're a public charity based on their 2010 decision. We were, I guess I should say, though it was revoked. And then the other one is that you have to operate exclusively along those lines. So I think maybe I'm, you know, still kind of foggy to me, but it's in our document, so I'm going to review them again. I just keep reading them, just wondering, like, wow. I mean, how? I kind of want to just bring up the thing to them, be like, why did you give it to us in the first place? I mean, you know, I mean, there's nothing that's really changed from our initial application. But the other things I've looked into is one of their arguments is that it's like, we're not doing anything charitable, because if a clinic really needed medical software donated or needed it badly enough, they could just buy it. But they leave out that they could go without and use paper records. So my, you know, and kind of our argument was like, well, the government, you know, your own kind of brethren, wants medical records to become de facto United States. So I think that's a weakness in their argument. There's maybe, you know, going over those, maybe I can start some conversation with everybody offline and just kind of highlight a few things that I do have questions about so that we can bring those up in an informal way with them.
Yeah. I do know that, this is Lou speaking, when I started the Suncoast Rio, we were a nonprofit in the early days. We weren't tax exempt though, so we were a state nonprofit. And our biggest competition was a place up in Tallahassee. I don't want to name them because we're being recorded, but they had the tax exemption 501c3, and they were using pretty unfair tactics, just to let you know. They were having business cards made up that had government emblems on them and handing them out and telling people all over the state that they were the official Rio base, that the government blessed them. I mean, they were doing really horrible things. But one of the things that got them was the newspaper looked at the people on the board, and the people on the board who, if you get over, I think, $200,000 in donations, a, sp- special kind of 990 has to be filled out, and it goes up on, you know, Charity Tracker or something like that, or the Charity Navigator, and you have to know what every single one of those people on the board do for a living and how much of their money goes into the organization you're on, and if any of their family benefits by the product of the nonprofit. So it gets ugly. And there was a big expose by the Tampa Bay Herald or the St. Petersburg Herald. Anyway, that place is gone. So I've seen it in action, what they do when they want to go after you.
So it sounds like we'll make a list of things and then informally bring them up and see what, I guess, in a way, just see how they respond.
Yeah.
And you'll probably, you know, I wish I could make it. I can't make Friday at 1, but if we had more than one person, it'd probably be good.
Yeah. I'll put up another link here in the meeting agenda that goes to the proposed determination, where they say you have to be organized and operate in, you know, a 501c3 manner. Just so that you can look at the law that they're citing and just have some idea of their arguments. Now, when we brought this up to the open source group, everyone was kind of like, you know, wow, this is like a death knell for the open source software industry to be a 501c3. And I think that's pretty much the lay of the land right now. It's a real battle. It has been that way for a few years.
Yeah.
So, you know, and our attorneys that we used to investigate this didn't like the way we responded initially, and that may have sent us down this path. You know, unbeknownst to ourselves, we didn't really know any better. But, you know, here we are. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea, Brady. I'll just open it up. If nobody can join, I mean, he seems like a really nice guy. His name's John, and it just seems like a matter of fact, like he does this, you know, every day.
Maybe good. Maybe get some information, maybe some advice. Because, I mean, you know, an option is pivoting where we're doing a lot more focusing on education and charity to low resource, you know, having us focus on that and not really. I mean, there are things we could do if that were, but I just feel like we're kind of dreaming in a way, because we've already been told, we've gotten lots of advice saying that it's going to be a huge battle. But it's still an opportunity. I guess we could at least try to take advantage of if we can get, you know, something, but I still think we're going to be stuck with restructuring, but you never know.
You never know, right?
Yeah.
So this is Matthew here. My only comment is just a small 2 cents. You know, if they come back saying, oh, you know, the EMR isn't needed, if the people are, you know, in need of one, they'll buy it or they'll use paper. Just try to, like, reinforce some of the international numbers and push that point home that, you know, folks outside of our country can't afford Cerner. They can't afford, you know, ECW. They can't afford Epic. You know, so just maybe try to be a little more aggressive about that. I don't know if that will help at all shape their understanding. They just might not understand, quite honestly. You know, they might think that everywhere is using, you know, a robust EMR, you know, and that's just not the case.
That's an excellent point. The whole international side is a big piece. Yeah.
I mean, this is Jit. Tibbin, back it up. I mean, the unique parts of OpenEMR available in different languages and all that. I mean, you know, because people in different countries, some Spanish-speaking countries, they need everything in Spanish. So I don't know other EMRs that can offer that. So, again, I agree that they probably just don't understand the software and what it can offer people in different countries.
Yeah, and these are arguments we've sort of tried, and I don't know and they may have even put us down the wrong path at the beginning. Because in a way, again, the focus is just that we're open source. There was logic that, you know, if OpenEMR tries to compete with commercial, openly is competing with commercial EMRs, and that is a ding against, which again, it's like, I don't understand why that would be, but like, we're not able to say OpenEMR is competing against proprietary EMR. So there's these things that are going on, I think, that we may not just be aware of, and maybe maybe we'll get some more information on Friday.
Yeah. That would be like saying Girl Scout cookies are competing with Oreos.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's almost like you're just, because you're open source now, you've just been, you get these, you're getting these arguments against us that are really, they don't really, like if you really look, if you do a survey of 501c3s, I mean, they're all over the board, and I don't know why open source has all of a sudden become sort of a target over the last probably six, maybe eight. I mean, I'm actually, even when OEMR was made nonprofit, it was still, back then, it was still not easy. But I think it's become tougher and they're cracking down more, but it's really too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back then it seemed to be a crapshoot. If you got the right reviewer who wasn't aware of maybe the All Points Bulletin on open source, then you got through okay. But, you know, the other thing was that they didn't like the board having a couple people on the board being on the list of professional support. So, you know, just going over, like, just maybe just going over each of those key points, if I can ask if he wants to add something or clarify. I did notice a couple of typos in the response, not to nitpick them, but just to make sure I understand letter for letter what it is they're spelling out. You know, at that point, if it still seems like there may be a sliver of hope, I can report back and be like, hey, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if they provided, like, well, you know, if you guys did this or if you fixed this.
That would be great. Yeah, kind of like getting your car through inspection or something, you know?
Yeah, right.
Anyways, okay, I don't want to take up too much time on
that. They're going to do that, bro.
Taking up
I just want real fast, just to give you another memory I have of this same group was, they were a 501c3, so they could go after grants. And in those days, grants were only granted to 501c3s, but they really were selling a product. And so the way they tried to make money and get around the 501c3 is they made everybody a board member. So we had like thousands of board members, and the board members had to pay $1,000 a year to direct a fee. So, I mean, you know, so the IRS has seen these people do these stupid little workarounds. And what you're doing in reality, if you really stand back and take a high view of that, is there is a fixed pot of money in the world, right, for people who are doing good causes for people who are in need. And by these nonprofits playing the game, they're not just, you know, beating the system and playing the system. They're also taking away from needy people, because that money gets smaller for those needy people too, those truly needy people. So the IRS, I think, is, you know, they've seen all this crap go on and they've just decided to put an end to it. I think they were already on the warpath, but then they got slowed down by the Tea Party starting a lot of 501c3s and challenging the IRS. And that kind of slowed them down a little bit, but I think they're back on now. So might not be a good time to be a 501c3. Mm.
Okay, well, thanks, Lou. And we'll move on to the next order of item of unfinished business, which is the VCU Hackathon. Just threw that back on there. I think I had a question with Brady about last month's minutes, which were already cleared up, and we're sponsoring Robert to attend this. And because of that, I think he's able to offer up a challenge. Kind of cool. You can actually just kind of search for VCU, like health hacks, and find out more about it. But it looks like really, really nice conference, and it should be a way, you know, for the OpenEMR sponsorship to really make a difference, you know.
Yeah, and it looks like Robert's working on a press release too. I forgot the date. I think it's early November. I mean, it's getting pretty close.
Yeah.
So I think he's starting to plan for that.
So that's been approved. So we're all set with that item. I believe that will be moved to finished business here. And the next item is marketing. Brady, do you know what some of the details are there?
We just kind of run this every time. Marketing, I'm trying to think what we're...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of Amazon Web Service stuff going on. So trying to market that and actually hopefully working with Amazon to try and even leverage, get more marketing from it is kind of the big thing at this point, I think. Unless, right. Does anyone else have anything to add on that?
This is Matthew here. I just thought of two little things. One is, you know, our registration tool. So we have 1,000 plus users that have registered to get, you know, updates about security patches and, you know, new releases. So that was cool. So we put that on the social media. And the other thing is I only emailed a few people about this, so I want to tell the group. I have been working on the CTIGS project, which is the natural language processing engine that scrapes through unstructured clinical text to understand it better. And the group behind it is a bunch of really bright people from prestigious universities, really. And it's an open source project through Apache. I've just befriended the maintainers and have been bothering them with questions and things like that about the software as I've been going along. And I mentioned to them, you know, oh, yeah, OpenEMR is going to be using it, you know, your solution, that is. And, you know, we're going to have a press release, and we'd love to see if you'd be interested in you know, kind of joint press releases or something, you know, where we kind of work hand in hand. And not only are they interested in that, but they would like to make their solution work for international users. So, in other words, since it's natural language processing, you know, it should in theory work with any language, but it's only pretty much working with English at this point. So that's really awesome. It seems like the two communities are going to work together. And, you know, not only is that good for our users, but it's also a good marketing opportunity, especially with a project from the Apache Foundation. I mean, that's a pretty awesome organization.
That sounds cool, Matthew. Is that Matthew you were talking?
Yeah, that was Matthew. Sorry, I forgot to say.
Is that natural language processing that you were talking about, where they look at unstructured text and interpret it?
That's right. So basically, the project is called CTakes, and basically it's written as an open source solution by bioinformaticists and programmers and doctors, and it's a really good group. So I've been implementing this into OpenEMR. I'm going to be about a month and a half out until I'm totally done with it. But yeah, they agreed to do a joint press release with us, and they seem to be interested in other kind of marketing opportunities as well. Just, you know, seeing what our two communities can do together, you know, so that's an awesome opportunity for us from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That has a good
value. This is Lou. I would like to suggest something, and it may be related to the restructuring, so we may not want to look at it now or look at it later, or maybe we do. But as, you know, whatever happens, whether we stay nonprofit or not, we still need to get the message out. And one of the things that, you know, our own group is doing a lot of good marketing, but maybe there are some smaller companies that we might want to invite them to pitch to us, you know, on a board call or a special call. I happen to know a couple of small companies that do marketing, and they're, you know, they're cheap, but if we could create a statement of work or something that we want for marketing and just give these, you know, tell them you've got 10 to 15 minutes to tell us your best deal. This is what we want. Can you do it? If not, you know, don't waste our time. So maybe we want to start considering, you know, having companies that just, that's all they do is marketing, pitch to us to be our public relations. Unless, you know, unless the board would rather just do it all themselves, that's okay too. I don't know, should I make that a, should we all think about that and then maybe next time we'll make a motion on it or
yeah. Okay. It's a good idea to get ideas from people, and
you know. Yeah, this is Matthew here. Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and I'm also interested because I was talking to John Williams, who I believe is on our call as a guest for today, but soon to be a board member.
I believe there might be an opportunity to find some folks that work pro bono for us in that capacity. I have no idea. I'm just speaking from what I heard from John. So I think that would be neat, you know, if they can do more advertising, even if it is a little bit more generic. All of our advertising has been thematic. You know, oh, we have this release and this software version, you know, upgrade, and we have this feature. But maybe just the non-exciting stuff, you know, just the generalized ads would be cool. I don't know if that would be helpful in the long run.
To have a company that wants to, you know, market for us, pitch to us. So if it takes, you know, we could probably have them lined up if we wanted to. So anyway, that's my suggestion is, we think about companies, not just marketing, but anything. When we identify something that we want to do, and you know, everybody on this call who's a board member has a job, right? So maybe if we find some function is important, we just maybe have those people pitch to us.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. This is Matthew again, and this is long-term dreaming kind of stuff, but you know, I would love to, you know, get our tax situation straightened out so we can have the grant monies to afford contractors, you know, because obviously, you're right, all of us have full-time jobs.
Yep.
Like a task to, you know, professional programmers or, you know, even like little small consulting teams, that would be amazing, you know. So that's kind of like a long-term dream, but right now I don't think we have the funds.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you know, you might find companies out there who are willing to do it pro bono just because they get a little bit of, you know, recognition too. So but anyway, so I'll just throwing it out there. And if you want me to write something, a paragraph or two, I can do that too on the idea.
Anything more in marketing? I know we have John Williams, who's maybe just wants to be quiet behind the scenes because you're doing so much work interfacing with AWS.
Yeah.
Hi, yeah, this is John. Yeah, I'm not a board member yet, so I kind of want to lay back, but since you brought it up, one of the things that in terms of long-term marketing is that we really should have like a press kit or a media kit on the website. So maybe a long-term action item.
Yep.
I'll get that in the
very useful.
That's a good idea. I'll put that in the, so we're reminded of it. I'll keep it in the addendums actually. That's something Robert would probably be good about looking into, actually, because anyways, we're looking into getting the logos formalized and standardized, too.
Yeah.
So a press kit would be good.
Okay, nice. And then another, I guess, every month item, conference outreach. Got, you know, Robert going to the VCU hackathon, health hack. And then I know we talk about Matthew's planned travel and later. Any other conferences out there?
There's a couple of really big conferences going on now, but you know it's way too late to get involved in them. There's the AHIMA conference is going on. This is Lou speaking. AHIMA conference is going on in CHIME, which is the College of Health Information Management Executives, which is the group of CIOs. And that's, I wonder if HIMSS is going on, because usually CHIME and HIMSS kind of go together, but I don't follow HIMSS that much anymore. So there are some big conferences going on now, and who knows if someone's going to be bringing up, you know, with all the fallout from Cerner and any clinical work. So I don't know if you guys probably haven't heard now, Cerner's getting sued now too for, their practice management modules are being challenged as not being accurate for revenue cycle. So they're being sued. So now you got eClinical, who knows? Maybe with these bigger conferences, Open EMR will get some free advertising when people bring it up.
Yeah. Lou, the HIMSS conference is usually at the end of February or
yeah,
you know, every year.
Yeah, I'm a fellow with hymns. I should know that. But you know, the thing that threw me this year is that Chime usually piggybacks on hymns conferences.
Yeah, they do sometimes. Yeah. And then you have state hymns meetings too, but the national conferences.
Yeah.
We should prep. I mean, that's when we should focus on that. It looks like March 5th through 9th in Las Vegas. Probably should start planning for that.
This is Matthew here. So I actually talked to somebody that used to work at HIMSS, and they had a pretty good title, like vice president of such and such. And he gave me some advice recently, and he was saying that if OpenEMR wishes to be a part of HIMSS, it would be best to get heavily ingrained in like the working groups. And I could be using the wrong verbiage here. I'm not familiar with the conference, but he basically said, you know, it looks much better if it's, you know, OpenEMR and they have an involvement in one of these like working groups. So I don't know if that rings any bells. I'm quite a conference novice at this point. So I'm just throwing that out there. If anybody else thinks that that might be something that we can get at, I'm not quite sure, but yeah, if there's a few people going, we might as well put one together, I guess is the thought.
Yeah, they have like these committees, I guess they can call it work groups, but committees on different areas that they kind of do work throughout the year, and then they have these meetings at the conference too.
Yeah, they usually close door meetings, and I used to be on a couple of those groups, and we'd meet on the phone, we'd have a weekly or monthly meeting, and then we'd come out with deliverables and papers. They like papers. And then at the conference, you'd get a room, and it would say, you know, this so-and-so group is meeting on this room in these hours. But usually the only people who attended would be the members of the team. I don't know. I think maybe getting speaking engagements might be a good thing. There are calls for papers or calls for speakers. And if you could find somebody who's got a good name or even not, and you know, say this is a topic we want to talk about, you know, that could be the route that your friend was talking to you about. That's what I'm thinking out loud here, is that if you're on a conference, then you're in the mainstream of the HIMSS. If you're on a committee or a working group, then you're in the mainstream of the HIMSS management. And you'll be more privy to getting these calls to speakers for the conference when they have a slot that they need filled. And, you know, I've had a couple of those slots. So I've spoken at HIMSS a couple of times, and that's usually how it happened is if you're doing something else with HIMSS, they recognize you, and then they therefore will let you know about other things going on. So that's probably what that person meant who told you that.
I'm looking at the interoperability. Probably the one that would be the more exciting one would be the interoperability working group. If you want to join, there's an email address. But it looks like these people on the group are pretty all heavily involved in the industry. Yeah, there's even a Cerner, clinical strategist.
Yeah.
But
I have a feeling, this is just a prediction I'm making, that OpenEMR is getting so much into people's heads right now that a letter to the right person in HIMSS, whether or not we were in a working group or not, would say we'd like to, you know, make our case, and we'd like to, at the next meeting, have a spot to speak. I have a feeling we'd be approved. You know, they don't charge for it. At least they didn't when I did it.
So this is Matthew here. I would not be opposed to that. And then I just want to briefly mention, just to close out this portion of the call, Andre is the best finding international conferences. He's already found three, one of which is the one that's in Nepal here coming up in November. He found another one in Romania, and it's like a prenatal conference, and it's 2018, and I think we should definitely, you know, submit an abstract. So what I did was I put together a small group of us here on the board and just a few people that I knew would be interested. And the idea is we're going to write the abstract and submit it later this month. So let me know if you want to be involved in that group. I believe it's just like myself, Robert, Andre, and Brady. I think that's it. So yeah, if you're interested, we're going to, you know, have a little session, put together the abstract and figure out, you know, should we get accepted, who would like to speak on behalf of our system. And, you know, maybe if you're passionate about that area, the prenatal area, then maybe this is a good opportunity for you.
Okay. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Lou. And now to raising funds, which would be great. And so we'd like to go to all the conferences. obviously, it'd help if we were 501c3, we could get the attract, you know, the charitable donations. But there's probably some other strategies that we'd like to talk about. So,
and the partner AWS partnership we'll talk about below, I suppose. You know, it looks like if we do restructure to 501c6, I think there's still grants you can go for. It looks like the Bill Gates Foundation, they allow people to go for their grants as a 501c6. So, but yeah, grants are definitely something we got to think about as we think about how we're going to restructure. I think no matter what, we're going to need a 501c3. So if OEMR can't be that, we'll likely have another way of doing that, but at some point in the future. I think there was talk about doing the, there's several, you already have that. Maybe the Open Collective stuff, I guess that's raising funds, but I guess it's a new business. We could always push that discussion because there's actually several of those different types of sites that do that. But maybe we'll push that down further below. So maybe. We'll,
okay. Yeah. Matthew,
yeah, unless someone has other ideas for raising funds, I guess we could just move on.
Hi, this is Matthew here. I would love to do a Kickstarter and put together a video. And this is one of those items that are among all the different things that I want to work on for OpenEMR, but just simply don't have the time at this moment to do. So I get excited about things and then they just sit on my to-do list. But if anybody is serious about, going about, a $50,000 or $100,000 Kickstarter, let me know. And we'll come up with a video idea where we'll pass around a camera to our various users, like, you know, doctors that use OpenEMR, and give them some talking points and tell that inspiring story. I think it's an awesome, no-brainer kind of thing. It's just a lot of work. And that's all I have to say about Kickstarter. So if anybody has any time.
I would like to reach out to you on that. Yeah.
Apparently, in a past life, Robert had some experience with video editing. So, yeah, anybody that knows anybody that would be willing to do something for good cause that has experience with video editing and stuff, you know, definitely bug them. Because this is, I think, a no-brainer.
Yep. So maybe we'll put so sometimes Lou's interested. And I think, Lou, you had that video that you, I think I saw, so.
Yeah, we have a couple of videos. We never did Kickstarter. What's that other one where?
It's Indiegogo. That's the other
Indiegogo,
one.
Indiegogo, right? That's another one. Yeah.
We can do either one. I don't really know what the advantage of using one over the other is. Maybe it's like they take less money if you use Indiegogo.
Indiegogo.
I mean, they're going to take money, but yeah.
No, Indiegogo has two programs. There's two plans. One is, if you set a goal, and if you get that goal within a certain period of time, I forgot how it went. It's been so long since I looked at it. In one case, you give the money back. You agree up front that if you don't make your target, you're going to give the money back that you received, and therefore they won't charge you anything. In the other case, you say, even if we don't meet our target, we're going to keep everything we get. And then that's like 3 or 6% or something like that. I could dig that out if you want. But the big problem that I heard about these Kickstarter-like places is that, and this really applies to Indiegogo, I'm thinking it's the same for Kickstarter, but when you sell your idea to people and, you know, you typically give them perks because you can't give them something of value because that would make them owners, right? So that would be the same as selling equity. and that would make you a broker. So it goes back to that same thing with the IRS. So these free places give out perks instead of product. And then everybody feels like all these people who spend, you know, $10 or $20 on an idea you put out that they like, then they constantly feel like they're management, and they constantly want to, you know, ask questions and have a say in the direction of the company and the product. And that could drive the people crazy. So I don't know. Yeah. Why don't I just give you a call, Matthew? Cause I've always had an interest in this. And,
Yeah. I would love to. I'd love to talk more. Cause like I said, this is on my infinite to-do list of exciting things that really should be done, but we need to get a team behind it and, put some serious thought. I just moved to Los Angeles.
Oh, so you're in the West Coast. Okay. Yeah.
And then a quick note about perks. Like, we could put them, in like the, you know, financial sponsor, you know, kind of area whenever we do a release, you know, some way that's like open source friendly, but, yeah, it's going to be limited because it's not like we're making a physical widget or something, right? It's not, you know, like, oh yeah, we're going to give you early access.
If you're going to have a new product release come out and everybody else is going to pay $500, you could say all your early adapters would get it for $50, and that's considered a perk. Or you could, I don't know, give them a coffee cup with the name of the product on it. That's a perk, right?
Yeah, it's just difficult with open source because we don't have prices. We don't have products. So I have a feeling we'll come up with clever ways. Like maybe we can bug a few of our, you know, users. Like, oh, yeah, you'll get like, you know, 30 minutes with a conference call with some open EMR providers and or maybe like a session with the core maintainers to learn about the code base. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, we can come up
with some stuff. But, you know, seriously, we could raise like $100,000, you know, and I think that could be really useful. And we might even invite the vendors to have some sort of alliance there. Like, you know, they can give a perk like, oh, yeah, you know, a month free, you know, of one of the vendors' cloud services or support or something. So I don't know. I don't want to like, you know, come up with all the ideas now, but I'm just hoping to basically speak to the excitement and rally some folks on the board to work with me on this because it's going nowhere. I don't have the time.
Well, I just hired somebody, by the way, who helped while she's learning. She's helped. Yeah. Count me in. I could have, I'll have her work on this with you. This would be a good thing for her. Okay. Anyway,
that's great.
And then, yeah, that's great. And Stephen, we can skip the next three because Robert's not here. Move on to new business. Yeah, just for time.
Yeah,
sure. Interest of time.
Yeah, I know. We're getting pretty close to an hour here already.
Yeah, and I'm fading, as I told Brady at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
We got to keep Lou awake here, so we got to keep...
Wouldn't be the first director to fall asleep during a board meeting.
We don't want to hear snoring during, yeah.
Okay.
Well,
so
what I suggested at the beginning of the call, Brady, if it's okay to bring it up now, is, you know, Mark wrote this letter, and, you know, if we could just all absorb what he said and maybe, I don't want to wait for the next board meeting, I don't think you do either, to, you know, to have our questions put together, and we could either submit them to Mark in an email, or we could have him... We could set a special time and maybe have him have our questions ready and have him address them if you guys feel that's what you want to do.
So. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think his main point is we're going to need a lawyer probably to really answer some of these questions. But yeah. I think we can read that for detail, and we're going to obviously come up with stuff, maybe set a time when he's available. Is he okay on a weekend, like a Saturday, or is he like during the week?
Yeah, he definitely is. He definitely
because we could just turn one of our Saturday meetings.
Yeah. This thing started with, if you recall, about two board meetings ago where I suggested I knew somebody who was an accountant who specialized in nonprofits, and maybe he could give an overview of the different kinds of 501s. So that's how this started. That last email he put out was just his idea on how to make it work. We don't have to make that the agenda. We could go back to the original thing and say, explain to us about all the different structures.
Yeah.
So whatever way the board wants to do, we'll do.
That would be great to have a Saturday, you know, an hour or so,
chat.
Maybe we'll do like next Saturday or something.
Yeah, I'll talk to him.
See if
he's
can
a good
do
friend
that.
Of mine. He's a good friend of mine.
Because it is complicated. It is, and I think we're almost headed towards having three different. You know, we'd have a 501c6, a 501c3, and then a profit. It's just
getting.
So I think we're gonna have lots of questions.
A lot of places do stuff like that, and you know, that's what happens when you get to be a big company. So, yeah,
it'd be great to have an attorney on the board who would find a spot. You know, to weigh in on these things. So.
Do you think any of those, you know, I know we contacted the attorneys for the OSI stuff. Do you think any of them would consider just?
I started looking over it, and there was this one group out of North Carolina. And another thing to consider is that there are a lot of state laws that weigh in, like Mark mentions in that email. And I took the snippet of his email and put it in the agenda on the forum. So you can click on that, and it's pretty informative. But yeah, so there was one group that seemed pretty cool, and they kind of view themselves as heroes in a way, as they want to make sure that the law is working, and so they look at, you know, situations. They feel like if you can't do what you want to do under the law, and you feel like you should, then there's something not right with the law. It's not like right with you and your organization. So, you know, I think there are some good contacts there, and that OSI is such a great group, and their leader there got us in touch with all these folks. So I think that's probably where we're headed, to get some advice from first.
Yeah, a lot of these legal firms, you know, they have in order to stay on their not their boards, what do they call them? They have a different word for a board. Their associations, bars, their bar associations.
Yeah.
They, you know, they have to do that. They have to do so much pro bono work. So we might be able to find them out there.
Yeah, so I think if we got like a North Carolina nonprofit specialist, they could make sure that what we have in mind is feasible. And I think, you know, we'll follow up from Friday's talk, and we'll be able to go from there, and hopefully line up Mark to come in and talk over what he wrote down, and then maybe we can reach out to some of those folks.
You know, all these associations, like HIMSS and SHIME and AHIMA, they're all nonprofits. So, I mean, and I've just been, it's funny, AHIMA is pushing a new organization called the Information Governance, the IG Partners or something like that. I forgot what they call them. But it's a for-profit. So AHIMA being a nonprofit is forming a for-profit to sell consulting for information governance. Now, you may not know this. This may be a little bit of only the old people remember this, but way back when the CCHIT certification organization was created, it started off as an offshoot of AHIMA as a for-profit standards organization, and then HIMSS purchased it after that, and then they finally went belly up. But those of you who remember the certification committee for, I don't know, CCHIT, they were a for-profit that was spun off by nonprofit. But the problem was, is they got around for a long time. Their fees went up higher and higher and higher to do testing. So their claim to fame was to test the HRs. But anyway.
Yeah, I remember that.
All right, so what I'll do is I'll talk with Mark about, I don't know, Brady, do you want to, like, poll the group and let me know when a good day is?
I would say next Saturday, because like, we could just shoot for the normal conference call on a Saturday. Next Saturday, not this Saturday, but the next one at 11.
Okay, I'll talk with Mark and I'll let you know.
And we could obviously be flexible, but that would be one to shoot for, because it seems like people can kind of make when we need to for these kinds of meetings. So
that's like 11 o'clock Eastern?
Yeah, time? Or Pacific, 11 o'clock Pacific.
All right, I'll check it. That sounds like a reasonable time. Yep.
Great.
And this is Jed. I'm based in Raleigh, North Carolina, so if there's any need to physically go and meet with folks in that area or close by for North Carolina nonprofits, I can do that.
Good. Nice. Thank you, Chet. Yeah, this group was nearby, if I remember one of the ones I looked at that the OSI director had recommended we speak with. And it was actually a lady who deferred anything and just pointed out some nonprofit lawyers that she knew of that had good reviews and people like to work with. So pretty trusted names. It was nice. So yeah, hopefully we'll get to that point where, you know, we've got some hope and a plan in place. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the AWS partnership.
Hey, is it okay with everybody on the board if I drop off? I'm, like I said, this is Lou. I'm getting very... You've got all my stuff already, right?
Yep. Okay. Permission granted.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody.
Lou, this is Matthew. You know, thanks for the enthusiasm about Kickstarter. I'll get in touch with you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I look forward to it. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, Lou. And Brady, maybe you want to help with this.
The partnership. And John, you can jump in. I mean, a lot of this is probably that we need to just make a committee. John's done a huge amount of work working with getting these AWS partnership going. We'll be, you know, hopefully we'll end up getting us a lot of business in terms of marketing, but also even potentially get a revenue for whatever, however the restructuring works towards whatever organization will go to. But I think a lot of it is sort of still in the, I think there's, you know, we need to make plans. And I think a big part of it will be what other companies or organizations want to participate in terms of providing support for these different cloud options that OpenEMR is going to have. There's going to likely be almost four of them, but I think a lot of it will be that we're going to have vendors and folks that are able to support these things. I don't know, John, if you have more to add.
I think basically we want to have a support option. And the question is, how do we organize that within this, you know, structure that's been, you know, I wasn't around when the consortium, the OpenEMR consortium was formed for some bid, I guess a Coast Guard bid in the past. So the idea is some interested parties who are already in business of providing OpenEMR support want to join together to provide the support for the OpenEMR offerings we're going to have on Amazon Web Services. So, you know, we're bringing those products to market soon. Actually, we're in the process of doing that. And, OpenEMR is not, you know, if you're a system administrator, yeah, you might be able to implement it, but, you know, most folks are going to need some support. So you really need that for it to be successful.
So are you asking for vendors as part of the support page to be part of that support? Is that what you're feeling would be necessary when the AWS services roll out?
Yes. Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, people who want to join this committee are in the business of providing support, so it would actually be an opportunity for them.
Yeah, I'm from Ace Health Solutions, and we provide support. We're not as big as EH or, you know, a lot of the other companies, definitely we have our set of clients and be interested in helping that out because I think it'd be very value add. I've used AWS, too, for hosting OpenEMR, you know, for our clients and developmental additions and stuff like that for testing and so I think it'd be very interested, but I know we need a lot. We need more vendors. So.
And this is Jit?
Yeah, it's Jit.
Okay. You know, we're starting small, right? We're starting from zero. So, this is something that can grow and hopefully we can pull in more parties as we need them. Even if we have just one or two to start, that's probably all we need.
And we can likely get my, I think we'll be able to get more than that, because I'm sure most people are going to want, it's an opportunity to get business. So
business. Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, my guess is we'll probably have, I could see five or six just thinking out, you know, just thinking where that would be very interested in, probably more. Obviously that we want to focus on ones that we know are going to, you know, focus on supporting AWS and those kinds of things. But our thought
this is
we'll
Matt.
Have a, oh yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
No, go ahead.
This is Matthew. You know, one of the cool things about this, I'm just speaking on behalf of, you know, the technology and the open source initiative. We can have the vendors support the cloud stack, and you know, by doing that, they'll get to use it. So, you know, you don't have to use it, but you have to know how to support it. But it's probably in everybody's interest to use it, because it's very good from a technology perspective. It's very scalable. You can get HIPAA compliance and everything. But B, it's really good for the community, because everybody can kind of improve it and, you know, work on it together. So it's kind of like that giving back factor is there.
And I've been using AWS for a while, so
We don't know yet. Obviously, we need to, that's why we have the committee going. But we're thinking that it may be that there may be the free download, which is you just download and use it, and then there would be a support option that would cost money, and then that would rotate through basically the list of vendors that are participating. So a vendor would just find out, hey, you've been assigned to support this. I mean, that's kind of what we're thinking, but obviously we need to do a lot more. You know that's our initial thoughts.
So yeah, this is John. So the idea of the committee is to kind of figure this out, and we need to submit some documentation to AWS for this. You know, they have what's called their support program, where if we sign up for it, which we will, you know, they give their customers the option to have support, and then they would. And then they would put the customer, they would put us in touch with the customer. So, but they do have some requirements in terms of, you know, we have to provide some documentation so they can, you know, we can show them that we conform to their requirements and so forth. But it shouldn't be too hard to do. It's just an organizational thing, just a matter of getting it organized. So thank you, Jit, for participating in this.
Sure. Let me know with meetings on this committee and, you know, discussions and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And then for the committee, so I guess we got this committee. Does anyone else want to join? I don't think we have Jit. I'm happy to be on it. I'm not really a vendor, but I'm happy to obviously participate.
Well, this is Sherwin. I guess I can join in too. I was listening, trying to catch, because I evidently missed the beginning of what was being said for this committee. Can you repeat it again for me, please?
Sure, this is John. So this is OpenEMR, this organization of which, you know, this board meeting is up right now, is going to be providing OpenEMR cloud services on Amazon Web Services. And so there needs, for that to be successful, there needs to be a support option. And so the purpose of this committee is to organize that support. I basically come up with a plan to deliver support for AWS customers who choose to, who ask for support for OpenEMR.
Okay, I understand. And sure, I'll join the committee as well and help with
Great.
This.
Thank you. So there's really two levels of this right now. It's just informal. It's really informal partnering. We're just using Amazon Web Services to launch OpenEMR Cloud, and which there'll be several models. Once we get a couple of those customers up and running, then we can join their formal partnering program, which has a whole bunch of additional benefits. And I'll be talking about that in future meetings.
In fact, I have a client request for organization with 25, not too big, but 25 users and I think 600 or 700 patient records. And they're looking to move OpenEMR into cloud-based hosting. So as you talked about, and this is just last week, and we've done hosting too and used data centers and other things in the past, but then I started using AWS, and this might be something that I wanted them to get on AWS for hosting. So would that be an appropriate client to start off with?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Where are they located in the U.S.? Probably.
Florida. They're located in Florida.
Yeah. So the first version of OpenEMR Cloud we're coming out with is it's not HIPAA compliant, so it's for the international market. And then hopefully shortly thereafter, we're coming out with the HIPAA compliant version. So hopefully we'll have
it. And there is, you know, there is an AWS, I don't know where, I guess whatever, I'm not sure we're calling it cluster, the first AWS that got released that you could use right now if you were looking for somebody for your clients. It's not really part of this, what we're doing yet, but it will be at some point. If you're looking, you know, yeah. That's where you end up paying about, it's about at least $140 a month for the AWS services themselves. It's, you know, mm-hmm. If you look on the download page, there's a link in OpenEMR to the cloud, and that'll take you to that mm-hmm. version.
Yeah, the only caveat on that is that I don't believe that AWS will sign a business associate agreement for that.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think so? If someone went after it?
I'm pretty sure they will not. In fact, I'm positive they will not.
Because we were hoping that
really
So if someone really did that, they wouldn't be able to get HIPAA.
Exactly.
Huh.
So but we are coming out with that. So, you know, we just didn't know about that when we did the first version. Next version. And frankly, Amazon didn't have it on their website. So this is something that's new for them. So they have a whole HIPAA compliant cloud, a specialized cloud for HIPAA compliant applications. So, and I hope we can get moving with that pretty quickly.
Cool. Yeah, when it rolls out, let me know. I mean, I have, you know, an inquiry if people are interested. So.
Absolutely. And that's Jet, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
At Ace Health Solutions, we're on that list. First one.
That's great. That's customer opportunities is what drives our priorities. So, it's great to know.
Yeah.
Do we have any? Do we have any? Just going back to the original cloud. Do we have any known customers that are using it? Or Matthew, did you know of anyone that was using it in the U.S.?
Okay, so just to clarify, I think John is mentioning, like, we haven't had any written, recorded examples of people attesting that they did the BAA and they have full HIPAA compliance with our first solution. I don't know anybody that has got it. There might be, you know, a handful of people out there that have, but, I mean, we don't have to, you know, they don't have to tell us. but, you know, as far as the meeting the requirements and all the security stuff and all the stuff in HIPAA, you know, we should be good. It's just, I think John is right in that we really need to have a shining example of somebody that got the BAA.
And I think by doing this partnering, we're also basically ensuring that it'll happen, right? That they will sign the solution for. So in a way, we're not making the end user go through the hoops of seeing if it will happen and doing all the legwork. We're doing a lot of this now, so the legwork's a lot easier for them when they do sign.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have a good feeling about it. I think there's going to be users that will pop out once it's more formalized. You know, I'm sure there's already folks that are using it. So yeah, and I just wanted to put on the record, I'm probably not going to join the committee because I don't want to be involved with the vendor stuff too much. You know, I don't want to be a vendor. I don't want to get too closely related with that. But I am the cheerleader. You know, I've been talking with John and we've been coming up with some plans. So I'm just there to, you know, give advice and my two cents from a technical perspective.
Yeah, Matthew's been great. Matthew actually got this program off the ground. So much credit to Matt and his, and the team he organized, really brought us far along. But just to go back to that existing, the first AWS solution, so I've gone into depth with this with the AWS people, and they will not provide a business associate agreement for that. They just will not. So it's not in question. It just, they won't do it. So that's why we're redeveloping it in the format they provide, where they will give a business associate agreement, and hopefully we'll come out with that, you know, in the next month or so.
John, this is Matthew. Did they say that based on, like, there's no support mechanism? I didn't know that. You know, could you give me some more information on that? Like, so I guess to ask it formally, why did they say they can't do it?
They have a... they have guidelines for how the app needs to be implemented, and then it needs to run on their GovCloud. And many of the CloudFormation, so the stack that you guys built, I believe uses many features according to Azure that do not exist in the GovCloud, in the AWS GovCloud. So that's probably the most obvious thing, reason why it won't work. So it has to run in the GovCloud, and then it has to conform to their HIPAA guidelines. And so that CloudFormation template, that stack, that original AWS stack that we built, which technologically is great. I mean, it's packed with all the great features, but it just uses AWS features that do not run in the GovCloud, which is a portion of Amazon Web Services, where all the HIPAA compliant apps that they will write a BAA for must run on.
Yeah, this is Matthew again. I'm not sure that that's exactly the case. Like, I think there needs to be a little bit more of a discussion, because basically the pieces of the solution that aren't HIPAA compliant, you know, we are using, there's no like PHI or anything. And in fact, all the services we used, I've actually used at my last job, that, you know, we developed systems that got BAA. So, I mean, I don't think we're breaking any rules there. It just might be a miscommunication. You know, there's certain features that are not HIPAA compliant that we're using, but they have nothing to do with anything medical. But, you know, let's table this. We'll take it offline. I'm fascinated by their response. I really want to know more about it, because I do want it to be a seamless experience for people in the U.S.
Okay, so a lot of the input I have came from Asher, who's, for folks that don't know, it's a cloud engineer that I think Matthew brought into the project. And, I mean, I think he is saying that, yeah, that current stack will not run, will not be HIPAA compliant per AWS's requirements. So, I mean, I'd refer you to him for the technical detail.
Okay, let's follow up. I definitely... And I'm thinking that there might be something that we're missing here. Anyway, I don't want to distract from the conversation. You know, I think, John, we really appreciate it. And I think this is very good for everybody, the community and the vendors and OEMR.
So, yeah, I mean, as soon as we can finish up this first version of opening our cloud, we want to... You know, Azure is primed to refactor the full stack version that we're discussing into the new format required. So that's high on the priority list.
And just to be clear, I'm not. We weren't talking about the cheap version, like the express version. We were talking about the first rollout, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And by the way, so, I mean, we don't actually know anybody, we don't know, have any identified end users using that, where we could, you know, at least as far as I understand, but I mean, if there were some, it would be great to know.
Well, thanks for the lively discussion. It's really exciting what you're working on. But just in the interest of time, we might as well keep moving on here. We're about an hour and a half in here almost, I guess. Let's see, we're at, sponsoring Matthew. I think we want to just get a board vote here for this exciting conference that they're going to take up your abstract on. Is it the C-Takes, Matthew?
No, this is more around, where we're at now with our outpatient focus and where we're going with our inpatient feature set.
Okay.
And we're also going to provide a realistic clinical use case with...
And the plan was for you, you're going to travel there, and then Andre is going to be like remote in kind of phone conference?
Yeah, he has a wedding, so he'll be staying, we're gonna have just me go and present my part of the talk. It's all the same talk, we're just splitting it in half 50-50. So I'm gonna do my part in person and network for us on our behalf, on behalf of OEMR and everything, and he's just gonna chime in on the video.
That's great. I guess we could have a motion to approve this. It sounds like a great.
And I'll second that motion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if there's anybody who's against this, you can speak up and.
Yeah. Hey, this is Jit. Thanks, everybody. Yeah. I got to run. I got an early morning meeting, but thanks a lot.
Okay, Jit.
Yeah. Hey, Jit, are you okay with voting in Daniel and John?
Yeah.
The board
yeah,
director? Okay, good, good.
You just mentioned that. I was waiting for that. So I
and then I'm going to make Matthew, or not I, we're going to make Matthew the vice chair, too. Just make sure you're okay with that, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, great.
All right, good night, guys. Thanks.
Night.
Okay. Bye, Jit.
We had to get him because otherwise we wouldn't have our quorum.
Oh, good thinking. Okay. Well, let's move on. I hope Daniel's still with us. Sorry that usually meetings aren't this long, but there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah, no worries. Hey guys, I'm still here.
Cool. And I mean, maybe you just want to speak just a little bit about yourself.
Yeah.
To those who aren't as familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Hey guys. So first, my name is Daniel Ehrlich. I shadowed one of the earlier calls about 2 months ago. Just to give you an introduction to this project, I started working with Matt specifically about 8 or 9 months ago, and we started out on some random JavaScript project. But from working with him, I got involved with OpenEMR, and I actually worked directly with him on the original project to bring OpenEMR into the cloud. Back then, I was at Oracle. And that works. And my job there was mainly with Amazon before it started becoming all Oracle Cloud. So, and today I'm basically a cloud engineer. If you guys work with Azure, I'm like a slightly less talented version of him, but I work every day with AWS and I helped set up that original project. And now I'm working with Python and Man on the C-Takes schema and text analyzer. So just from that introduction, does anyone have any other questions? I wanted to cover a lot, but I'm already pushing time here, so.
Yeah, that's fine. No, thanks for saying again. I think you probably said that a couple months ago too, but yeah.
But yeah, I was. I was a little self-conscious.
Glad to have you back.
When I said that.
That's great. We should put the vote forward here. If there's any objections to Daniel becoming a member of the board, please speak up. If not, we'll just move on. Okay, great. Right now for John, we know your skills, John, what you've been working on, and if anyone has any questions up for John about why he wants to be on the board or what brought him here.
This is Matthew. I just want to
put this out there. I don't think that it was mentioned, but John actually has a lot of talents in the business world. Apparently he has some credentials and the MBA. So I think that's really exciting to have somebody that really has a good idea of that side of the world, as well as obviously the data science side of the world. So I'm personally really excited to have him on. And of course, Daniel too. Daniel's a good friend of mine. Daniel's very talented at the cloud stuff. So I'm just excited to have everybody get to meet them and work with them. They're quite a pleasure to work with.
Thanks, Matthew. So I just maybe some folks don't know, I was involved with this OpenMR project. I think it was back around 2010. There was a prior administration. Unfortunately, we did not have, Brady wasn't involved on a day-to-day basis. And so this was with for Meaningful Use One. So the company I was with, we made contributions to OpenMR for that Meaningful Use One certification. I left the project because I didn't like, frankly, did not happy with, you know, the way the management was working. You know, these are the same people who dropped the ball on the certification. I mean, on the IRS, you know, maintaining that status. And so once I heard Brady was back running it again, I kind of started following again. I think I talked to Brady maybe about a year ago, you know, just touch base on, you know, wouldn't it be great to have an analytics capability with an OpenMR. So when I first started coming back in, I don't know, a couple months ago, it was really on the data science side. We do have a analytics platform that we put together for OpenMR that we hope to get back to. Right now, I'm just more focused on the AWS stuff.
Wow, good to know. Yeah, thanks for sharing. I think it was your LinkedIn profile, so you get to see some of your credentials there too. That was nice.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you as well, Daniel. This is great. I mean, we've got quite a talented board. So if there's any objections to John coming on the board, please speak up. I think we're all in favor. As we'll move on here. Brady already mentioned, like, Matthew to step into the officer role of vice chair, which I guess would be vice president, technically under the bylaw. So if anyone has an objection to Matthew stepping into that role, please speak up. Now we'll move on to discuss plan to assign several volunteer staff positions. This is yours, Brady.
Oh yeah. So, and this, a lot of this is just getting positioning us for the AWS partnership. So we just, you know, created a lot of different staff positions. My internet's kind of down, but going off my memory, kind of just a bunch of chief officers, data scientists, who actually is John, cloud engineer and the software engineer. This is all really just to get, it just makes our organization kind of look like we have staff and that we're going to use these staff members to help out with the AWS partnership, essentially.
Cool.
So
with the AWS partnership, Brady, do you need like a certain amount of certifications or something?
I'm not sure. John will probably be able to answer that better.
They do want
staff member.
Oh,
they do want some. Yeah, you know, to achieve certain levels of their formal partner program. Yeah, they do want some certification. So I can share some of that info.
Okay. And would that be like the cloud engineer and the software engineer type positions, or everybody?
Well, it doesn't matter who has them. So there's their technical certifications, which are things that like Asher and Daniel would have. But then they have business level certifications, which are much easier to get. And so, you know, for people who want to be involved with this, I would recommend that. I personally spend about a half hour a day going through their webinars. You know, it's basically how they indoctrinate you into their business, you know, terminology and so forth. So But they are useful, and I'll send information out to people who are involved with the partnership.
And Daniel, if you're interested in just, you know, let us know, or anybody is wants to be part of this, let's just let me.
Yeah,
know.
This is John. It would be great to have another cloud engineer on the team.
Yeah, and John, two things. One, I can get with you after this call, and two, something else I want to say is every time I look at your name, I think of John Williams and the composer from Jurassic Park. I don't know why, but that's the only other place in my life I've seen in John Williams.
There's a lot of John Williamses out there, so I'm John D. Williams.
I'll keep that in mind.
There's a lot of us out there.
I don't know if anyone else here watches Steven Spielberg movies, but that's the guy for his music.
Yeah.
I think that's it on the staff positions.
Okay. And Matthew brought up the Open Collective chance to be another fundraiser.
Just one quick thing about the staff. We failed to mention Andre is going to be our chief medical officer. And that's really exciting because obviously he's like very enthusiastic about the project. He's learning how to program so he can help. But, you know, he's worked a lot with myself and John around like clinical use cases and trying to get real data. He and I are actually working on a little side project to get some de-identified patient records from his clinic into OpenEMR. So, you know, I think it's a great opportunity and really adds a lot of weight to our project to have him as our chief medical personnel.
Yeah, definitely. Good point.
And you know, when I get back online, I'll send out what the staff members are and their titles and stuff.
Nice. Okay, and Matthew, do you want to say something about Open and Collective real quick?
Yeah, it's not that exciting. It's just a kind of how do I say it? It's pretty much a place where people give money to open source projects they like. And it's really popular with JavaScript libraries. So if you guys are familiar with React or Preact, they are like well-funded. They get like $10,000 a year, I think, or $10,000 a month. I can't remember. I figured, hey, what the heck? Why don't we just put an entry on that site and see if people will contribute? You know, obviously there's going to be a level of, you know, Open Collective taking money from each donation or whatever, and there's probably taxes involved, but we should just capitalize on any and all open source, you know, funding collections, you know, or collectives that are out there. So if it's cool with everybody, I'm just going to put together a little paragraph or two about, you know, our project and put the logo on there and we'll see if anybody contributes. I'll be happy if people give us a few bucks a month. It doesn't really matter. It's just, we should just be taking advantage of these services. They're free and everything.
Super. Yeah, I you replied to me about putting this on the agenda or just acting on it, and it reminded me of that email I sent you. You know, obviously that's what you used as the reply to, but yeah, there's a snowdrift.coop, which is another form of raising money for projects that more like developers, I think, are into, which kind of seems like this gets a little more attention from the techie side, but it's a different way of raising money. So I'll look into that a little more. I promise to follow up on that.
If we could just, and I know this is, yeah. I know this is kind of strange, but can everybody just agree that, you know, that site and Open Collective we can sign up for? I mean, it shouldn't be like, in my opinion, I don't think it's a big voting thing. They're pretty much just sign on, and if people give us money, it will be, you know, to OEMR, just like our donate button. So, I mean, is everybody cool with that?
Yeah, I'd say go for it. Are there any other sites that are out there?
Yeah, there's GrataPay. I actually know the gentleman that runs it. He's from Pennsylvania. It's just like Open Collective, but I think it's more so like tiny amounts of money that they give to open source projects. So that's called GrataPay. I figure let's just sign up for all these. You know, I mean, they're all basically the same business model, and you know, it's very ethical. You know, it's just people donating, and they go through this central system so that you know they can sustain and help out the open source project. So it's just, you know, if we get $100 a month from it, I'm happy. You know,
that'd be great.
Yeah, another one is Patreon.
Well, Patreon's a little bit interesting though, because you kind of have to provide a good content plan. So, for instance, if I were a video creator, every time I put out a video, the Patreon, you know, request would go out. So, like, you only get paid if you create content. So, I don't know how that would work with like open source, because you know, obviously, open source isn't putting out videos or anything. It's more abstract. So, yeah, I looked into Patreon. I don't think that's for us. I think unless it's changed, it's pretty much for like video creators. I'm a big fan of it because I watch a lot of YouTubers, and they're all on Patreon. You know, say, oh, you know, I want to have this new video come out. Support my Patreon, and once it comes out, I'll get all the money or whatever, all the donation money.
Gotcha.
I'll double check though. Maybe they have a special area for programmers and open source teams. You know, that would be cool.
Yeah, Matt, I want to say with Patreon, like to give you one example, Kyle Simpson, who actually lives in Austin, Texas, and I really like him. He wrote all the You Don't Know JS books. So that little series, he's on Patreon, and I don't know, maybe he does have some quid pro quo, but I know programmers are on there. Maybe he's making videos too. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be the book itself. Like, oh yeah, I'll come out with another edition of the book. You know, we'll have to look into it. I just know it generally because I've been following that company for a while. Because, like I said, I like YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTubers, so okay. It tends to be like goal based.
That's very possible.
All right, I'll follow up. I'll let you guys know. But yeah, like as long as everybody's cool, I'm just gonna go ahead and sign us up for all these sites. You know, you can't hurt, right?
Just as long as we keep track, that's all we got to do.
That's right.
I think we're near the end of the meeting here. I don't know if Steven's still on.
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah, thanks. I want to thank Matthew for bringing up, you know, just making that an official motion. Started talking here and I was on mute, but as long as there's unanimous consent, we don't need to vote as a small board. It kind of keeps things moving along. And but if there was any dissent, we would have to, you know, take a vote and be a little more formal. But you can make a motion, doesn't need to be seconded, and then if there's any dissent, we would then, you know, kind of get more formal. But there is a nice simplified handbook that was posted to the wiki for the OEMR, so maybe pull out some finer points for next time to brief the new members and just refresh us how it should operate. So yeah, with that little spiel, thanks. We don't have any public community concerns, so I guess we can adjourn.
Great, I'll stop recording.
Number 8. Okay, great. Thanks, Brady.